content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book The First Time Gardener, Growing Vegetables by Jessica Soerts. And we left off our last podcast in Chapter 4, Growing with the Seasons. And our topic right now is frost-free zones. Some of you may live in an area that never freezes. If that is the case, you will never have to worry about having enough warm days to grow a crop. You automatically know that you can grow any plant and have enough frost-free days to see it to maturity. However, gardeners in frost-free areas face a different challenge. Though you won't have to lose plants to freezing temperatures, you may deal with extreme heat posing problems in the summer. Many warm weather gardeners plan their gardens to grow through fall, winter, and spring, and automatically plan for the garden to be empty or tapering off during the summer. This eliminates the struggle of keeping plants alive and thriving when temperatures surpass 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees centigrade. Here are some heirloom varieties that are forgiving for very hot climates. Abu Rawan tomato, Arkansas Traveler tomato, Armenian white melons, harvest young to use like a cucumber, Chinese noodle beans, Floridad tomato, red Malabar spinach, a climbing, heat-loving green, not a true spinach, silver slicer cucumber, and trucker's favorite corn. Our next topic is made in the shade. Though plants need sun to grow, too much sun or sunlight that is paired with very hot and dry temperatures can be a detriment. If you live in a very hot climate where summertime temperatures regularly reach or exceed 95 degrees Fahrenheit or 35 degrees centigrade, consider setting up shade cloth over your garden. Shade cloth filters sunlight and minimizes evaporation and drying. It can extend the health and life of your plants into very hot summers, where gardens may otherwise suffer and die. Short seasons is our next topic. Anything less than 120 days is considered a short growing season. Gardeners with short growing seasons will need to lean heavily into the measures that give them a head start, like starting seeds early indoors, or that extend their growing season, like row covers. These measures won't allow people to grow in places that have extremely cold winters, but they can extend the usable time. Cold climate gardeners should familiarize themselves with plants that can withstand cold temperatures. If you live in an area with a very short season, you may not be able to grow straight through your very cold winters, but you can certainly maximize your space and time by growing food that can survive frost. And here, I'm going to go away from the book for a minute. Here in North Carolina, where we're doing this program for, we have four zones. Six is the far west of us, of Raleigh. Seven is the Appalachians. 8 is Piedmont or Raleigh, which is where we're recording from, and 9 is the coast. So those are the zones that you should look for in any seeds if you buy them. Our first frost is usually around October 14th to November 7th. And a growing season is April 4th to October 28th. So we do have 207 days of growing. So we're definitely not a short season. But we do have quite hot summers now. So maybe the shade covers could help a little bit. But we continue with this short season topic. And growing frost-tender plants in a short season can feel frustrating. Be sure to check the days to maturity when shopping for seeds. Rule out plants that need a long season to mature their fruit, like for varieties that are specially developed to produce early. This means they are ready to harvest sooner than typical varieties, making them prime candidates for growing in an area that doesn't have a lot of frost-free time to spare. Here are some good early heirloom varieties for short growing seasons. Blacktail Mountain Watermelon is 65 to 75 days and tolerates cool nights. King of the North Bell Pepper, which is 68 days. Fisher's Earliest Corn, which is 60 days. Siberian Tomato, which is 55 to 60 days from transplant. Subarctic Plenty Tomato is 50 to 55 days from transplant. And Early Prolific Straight Neck Squash is 50 days. If you are gardening with a short season, make the most of your frost-free window by very strategically planting your garden site. This can make a difference during the early and late days of your season, when the risk of frost is higher. Choose a very sunny location, ideally on the south-facing side of a building or tree line. Do not plant your garden in any low-lying areas where cold air may accumulate. Avoid the north-facing side of buildings or slopes, which may be slow to thaw and quick to freeze. And our next topic is season extension. Extending your season is as simple as knowing the temperature needs of each plant and providing the necessary protection to keep those plants alive. Trying to grow frost-tender varieties through a cold winter will require a well-sealed greenhouse and steady supplemental heat. Most small hobby growers won't be set up for this level of season extension. For many people, Season extension will just mean adding a bit of growing time in early spring and again into late fall. In some moderate climates where winters are extreme, season extension measures can be used to grow food all year. These tips and this information is not an exact science, and there is always a risk in attempting to grow outside the given season for a plant. For the determined gardener, it is a worthy risk, and the payoff can be great if you are successful. Purchase an outdoor thermometer and monitor the highs and lows of inside whatever cover or cold frame you are using. You will notice a very large difference on sunny days versus overcast days. The purpose of any of these covers is to warm and maintain the warmth of the air around the plant and the soil that plant is in. Covers keep the cold wind and precipitation off your garden, thus protecting from frost damage. Cold, hardy plants, like the Brassica family, can withstand temperatures well under freezing, but they can be damaged by ice or snow or biting winds. With a little bit of cover from these elements, these plants can be maintained through even very cold winters. Cold frames. Cold frames are simple structures heated by the sun alone. They are built low to the ground, sometimes over an existing garden bed. They are also often placed on the south side of buildings to receive optimum sunlight, with the building as a wind block. They are well suited to growing low-profile, cold-tolerant plants, like leafy greens and root vegetables. Transplant cold, hardy plants into a cold frame 8 weeks before the first frost. Cold frames can also be utilized for seed starting in the spring. They will not protect against very cold night temperatures, so tender seedlings should be brought indoors for cold nights. Row covers. Frost fabric, sometimes called frost fleece, is a lightweight material that can be draped over loop hoops to cover garden rows and garden beds. This is an inexpensive method of season extension and protects cold, hardy plants from the elements. Greenhouses. I am often asked by new gardeners, do I need a greenhouse to garden? The answer is absolutely not. But if you garden for long, you may end up wanting one. Greenhouses, even small, unheated ones, push your growing season, allowing you to start seeds weeks before your last frost and grow cold, hardy varieties throughout the winter months. Pre-made greenhouses are available for a premium, but you can also find affordable kits that, with some reinforcement, can serve these purposes well. Our greenhouse was crafted from used windows. It provides food throughout the winter and houses all our seedlings in the spring. And our next topic is emergency season extension, also now known as, oops, I planted too soon. Even very experienced gardeners occasionally find themselves scrambling to protect tender plants from an unforeseen cold snap in the weather. These measures are not something to rely on. Planting frost-tender plants before your last frost date is really not worth the trouble. But if you make a mistake or get taken by surprise with freezing lows in your forecast, you can protect the plants and get them through a couple of frosty nights. The morning before you are expecting freezing lows, water your garden thoroughly. You don't want standing water, but you do want the plants to have plenty of time to soak up ample moisture. This insulates the cell walls and gives them a small measure of protection from frost. Covers of any sort can help protect them, protect from a mild freeze. Use plastic milk jugs with the bottoms cut out and place over the plant like a cloche. Cover plants with overturned storage totes, glass vases, buckets, or even large pots. In the case of having several plants or an entire garden bed to cover, lay a sheet over the entire thing, making sure the edges are in contact with the soil and weighed down by stones so it doesn't blow away. Put these covers in place the evening before the freezing night, before the sun has set. Make sure you remove covers in the morning before the sun gets too high in the sky, because glass containers can cause sun damage in bright sunlight, and opaque containers can cause plants to become stretched and puny in just a couple of days. Replace these covers every evening until nighttime forecasted temperatures are above freezing. If you fail to cover your crops or are unable to do so, but you know they are being exposed to frost, wake up early and get to your garden before the sun rises. Water the plants, cold water from the hose is fine, before the sun shines on them. This allows the plant's cell walls to warm up slowly instead of suddenly, minimizing the damage the freeze would have caused. This is an old farmer's trick and has saved many crops from being ruined. It works. And our next topic is push the limits. Being equipped with an understanding of the conditions plants need to thrive gives you the ability to take educated risks. Push the limits and experiment with growing plants in different conditions. You'll never truly know whether or not something grows well in your area throughout the year until you try to grow it. In the next chapter, we'll talk about one of my favorite parts of gardening, seed and plant shopping. And we are now at the next chapter, chapter 5, the need for seed or not. Heirloom seed catalogs were the gateway into my current gardening obsession. Something about the pages full of possibility pushed me to overcome my past failures and attempt to grow again. You may be wondering what is best for you and your first garden. Should you dive headlong into starting your plants from seed, or should you purchase started plants that are ready to be transplanted into your prepared garden space? You can grow a successful and fruitful garden with either option, so there really is no wrong answer. However, there are some things you should know so you can embark on your plant or seed shopping endeavors with confidence. Let's discuss the pros and cons of both approaches. And here we go. Buying started plants is our next topic. Every spring, racks of little started plants for the edible garden pop up in front of big box stores, hardware stores, and local feed stores. Even some of the grocery stores get shipments of plants in from nurseries. For me, this is such a happy occurrence. For those few shining weeks, it feels like I live in a world where growing food at home is the normal thing to do. Buying started plants is pretty straightforward. The nursery or gardener who started the plant from seed has taken care of the process of nurturing it through the seedling stage and hardening it off so that it can handle being transplanted out in the elements. Once the started plant arrives at your garden, it is ready to go directly into the ground, pot, or raised garden bed. Because someone has put in the time and work of raising the plants, and because many times they are being sold by a third-party retailer who purchased them at wholesale from a nursery, started plants are more expensive. Prices of plants vary based on how mature the plant is and whether it was grown organically. Usually, a single plant costs a few dollars. They may be a bit more if you purchase organic or heirloom options. Individually, this isn't a huge expense, but if you are planning on growing a large garden, the price of started plants can add up quickly. If you are concerned about budget but are not in a position to start your own plants from seed, you can save money by purchasing younger plants in multi-packs of four or six of the same variety. Later in the season, many hardware stores and feed stores will discount their plant starts. Local nurseries will often offer discounts if you purchase an entire flat of plants. The other big drawback of purchasing started plants is the limitation of choices. I've noticed this tending in a positive direction, and I hope growers will continue expanding into more heirloom and unusual varieties in the future. Unfortunately, it doesn't make financial sense for nurseries and growers to offer started plants of the hundreds of varieties we see in seed catalogs. Most major stores source all their plants from the same national supplier. This means that store by store, there is little variation in the varieties offered. Usually, you will see a handful of hybrid varieties and a few of the more well-known heirlooms for sale at any given place. Just like we have to narrow down the options and choose what to grow, professional growers have to do the same. If you desire a variety of colors, sizes, and flavors of fruits and vegetables, and enjoy growing unusual and rare things, I highly suggest starting from seed. If this is not an option, check local farmers' markets as well as locally owned and run nurseries. And network with other gardeners. Often community gardening organizations will host plant sales in the spring for gardeners to sell their extra plant starts. You are far more likely to find unusual and rare started plants from these sources than from national chain stores. Started plants may cost more and may not offer much variation in choices, but they definitely corner the market on convenience. Perhaps you don't feel confident enough to take on the task of seed starting, or you simply do not have the time or space to do so. Buying your plants already started is a wonderfully simple way to begin your first garden. And our next topic is growing from seed. It's going to be hard for me not to sound wildly biased in this chapter, because truly I am wildly biased. As a move of solidarity, I like to buy a few flats of plants from local nurseries every year, but the majority of my garden is grown from seed. I love seeds. They are such a source of joy and excuse me, potential. Seeds are by far the more economical route to growing a food garden. A single pack of tomato seeds cost about the same as a single started tomato plant, but a pack of seeds may have dozens or even hundreds of seeds in it. The value is incomparable. Saving seeds to grow from your own garden gives you the ability to continue gardening year after year with no additional financial requirement, bringing the overall cost of gardening down significantly. Considering the lower initial investment, a beginner's failure costs less. If a mistake is made resulting in a loss, seeds are cheap enough to try again, which is a lot easier financially than having to go buy more plants. The world of choices offered by seeds is their greatest selling point. When using starting plants, you are limited to the varieties available from the nurseries. But when seed shopping, your options are without end. I fell in love with the garden, not in the garden itself, but in the glossy pages of a seed catalog. There I was introduced to fruits and vegetables I had never seen or heard of in my life, and I was desperate to try them. I knew I would never encounter purple tomatoes or giant squash or teeny tiny cucumbers or boldly streaked eggplants at my local grocery stores. There was nothing else for it. If I wanted to try them, I'd have to grow them myself. And here's a little point. They have a little box of tips for plant shopping. The leaves tell a lot about the health of a plant. Avoid purchasing any plants with very pale, spotted, or heavily curled leaves. They should not be wilted. All of these things can be signs of stress or sickness. Look for plants with strong stalks. They should not be broken or struggling to stand up. Purchase from a retailer that is caring for their plants. If the entire display of plants is dry and wilted, purchase elsewhere. These plants have likely not been regularly cared for and may not grow or transplant up. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and we hope you'll join us again soon for our next podcast. Thank you.